Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest and I felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Surprise! Somebody's got a little fire in his belly. This is Wretched Radio. If you have never met Dr. Greg Gifford, he is a Fortas Fellow. He is the host of Transformed. You have missed out on meeting Mr. Calm, Mr. It's all right. Everything is fine. It seems like you could put paddles on the fellow and just give him a jolt and he'd still be perfectly calm. That's Dr. Greg Gifford. Or so I thought, listening to the Transform podcast, I heard a man who increasingly is getting a fire in his belly aimed at what? The mental health industrial complex. He is not a fan. And more than that, I think he is rightly putting his finger on the pulse of a very large problem when it comes to the medical health industry. They're not helping, they're harming. It's doing more damage than it is good. And that is why his upcoming book, Lies My Therapist Told Me, it's going to be a bombshell. I hope you will consider pre-ordering it even now. You can do that at fortasinstitute.org/lies. But if you are not persuaded, like Dr. Greg Gifford, that there is a threat to Christians. I mean, it's a threat to everybody, but a threat to Christians when it comes to emotional flourishing. We talk a lot about the internet. We talk about pornography. Hey, AI is coming. Hey, we got to be looking out for that. Hey, IVF, we got to deal with this. Hold on. What about mental health? It is a barbarian at the gate. And unfortunately, they've kicked down the door and they have marched in, not just into society, but into too many churches that say, have at 'em. Go ahead. Take our people. You're the professionals. Let me share with you a snippet from Greg Gifford's podcast. I so encourage you to start listening to Greg. His Transform podcast, it will grow you. It will strengthen you. It will help you to get a grip. You say, are you going to finish that sentence? No, that was the sentence. It'll just help you to get a grip on understanding how we are supposed to think, how our busted brains are supposed to function, so that you can be more like, well, Greg, at least most of the time, this is from Transformed. This is a statistic I had never heard before. This one was new in his Transformed podcast. This was the series, More Than a Diagnosis. Is that the one, Jimmy? More than a diagnosis. Yeah, he started out with some stats to indicate the prevalence of mental health diagnoses. And those are statistics, at least I've heard before. But this one, gulp. This is frightening.
Symptoms of ADHD occur during childhood, and many children continue to have symptoms and impairment through adolescence into adulthood. Center for Disease Control. This is the diseases control. This is the empirical science. We're talking about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So obviously there's a medical test for this, right? Obviously, there is. Like, obviously, when we're diagnosing kids as young as 10, according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, obviously, we're doing brain scans and blood tests and scanning for vitamin deficiencies and studying the gray matter of their brain, right? I mean, obviously, the short answer is that no, we are not doing that.
That's as sarcastic as I've ever heard Greg Gifford. You got to know the fellow. I'm telling you, he's like butter. He never curdles. Okay, I'm not going to go any further with that illustration because it was bad right out of the gate. The point is, this is a worked up man who has spent many years studying the secular psychological industrial complex And he ain't happy about the way that they are labeling our children.
We are using the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. I'll talk more about that in this second segment. But we're using the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is this encyclopedia of symptoms. We're using that to diagnose children with medically sounding labels. Guys, we have to wake up. We have got to wake up. We have got to be discerning and skeptical. Can you imagine being told that you have ADHD ever since you were 12 or 13 years old? That's just the way you think about your own giftedness. That's how you self-conceptualize. Can you imagine that?
Did you hear that language? That is how you think of your giftedness, not your mental illness. You're gifted a certain way. Have you read Ephesians 4:7 lately? It is a magnificent verse that should cause you to rejoice in your giftedness. You say, no, I have deficiencies. I don't have a long attention span. Or in a different sphere, I don't really have a creative bent. Do you know why? It is because Jesus Christ himself distributes his gifts. The talents that you have, they are custom made for you by your king who now has you on assignment. You have ADHD as much as this cup of tea that I'm drinking. Instead, you have an attention span that perhaps isn't as long as somebody else's. Why? You have a mental illness, says the DSM. No, says God, that's the way I made you. Now, instead of trying to cram you into a box that was created by the education system when it comes to children, society, you've got to be making sure that the kids, they sit for this long and they receive this many credits on this particular subject and they must behave and not squiggle and wiggle. They've got to pay attention. That box of conformity, some people just don't fit into. And it's not because they have ADHD. It is because that is the way that God made them. Now, what a difference that makes. How's about a child? Instead of being labeled and then typically written a prescription, honey, this is the way God made you. Now, let's just figure out how we can put that to best use for his kingdom. Isn't that an encouraging way to look at it?
Can you imagine the handicap, the disability that we can give young people by telling them what they cannot do from a very young age? We must be skeptical. So it's no shock then that girls are less diagnosed and boys are more diagnosed with ADHD. It's not a shocker. Harvard Health published something that was fascinating.
This is scary.
It said, you know, there is a 30% greater likelihood to be diagnosed with ADHD based off of one factor. Are you ready for it?
Can you guess it? Go ahead, Jimmy. There's a 30% increase. There's a factor that's going to determine whether or not you have the ADHD. Go ahead and guess.
I don't know.
Okay. Ever since I heard this, I've been asking people. And typically the first thing that people say is male. And by the way, that is a factor because more males are diagnosed with this than females. But that's not what, was it Harvard discovered? Get ready for this.
30% greater likelihood that you would be diagnosed with ADHD if you're born in August.
What?
Harvard Health Publishing. Double check me, fact check, please. If you're born in August, 25% more likely to be treated for it than a child born in September.
Huh?
If you have to be 5 years old by September 1st to start kindergarten.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting, is it just a correlation? Is it a causation? That the kid who is born in August who qualifies to be enrolled that year is going to be what? The youngest kid in the class. And they're more inclined, 30%, to be diagnosed with ADHD. Maybe it's not a disease. Maybe it's an, I don't know, a maturity issue.
You know, the greatest shaping factor of being diagnosed with ADHD is the month that you were born. The youngest boys in the class are the ones to be diagnosed the most. Guys, can we not zoom out for a second and say the secular therapeutic doesn't have a clue what's going on? How silly is this? The first lie is that the secular therapeutic is objective medicine. But the greatest difference in being diagnosed with ADHD is what is your birth month?
Wow.
Don't you think this has to do with development, maturity? Don't you think this has to do with parenting? Don't you think this has to do with the giftedness of a child?
Mm-hmm.
Of course it does. Because this is not empirical medicine. This is not empirical medicine. This is subjective medicine. This is like a game of hot and cold. You ever played one of those games? Am I getting close? Warmer. Warmer. Scalding hot. On fire hot. Lava, you're there. That's what it's like for the secular therapeutic in symptom-based diagnosing.
Mm. Millions of kids are being labeled, even as we speak. And Greg Gifford is shining a spotlight on this. And I got to tell you something. Some people are going to be blinded by this. If you're not listening to the Transform podcast, this is what you are missing. Not only are you missing really helpful information like the statistic you just heard, which should cause all of us to go, wait, what? You've got a 30% greater chance of being diagnosed with ADHD? If you were born in the month of August, there is trouble in paradise. Greg Gifford is exposing it, and we will continue to let him do just that. Encourage you, consider pre-ordering his book, Lies My Therapist Told Me Now. Basically, what you just heard is the whole book. But it does more than shine a spotlight on the problem. It offers a better solution. Next on Wretched Radio.
Marriage and parenting, beautiful gifts from God, but let's be honest, they're not easy. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're wondering if you're doing it right, listen, you're not alone. And more importantly, there's hope. Pastor Brad Bigney understands these challenges. With 36 years of biblical counseling experience and over 3 decades of shepherding his church, he brings you God's timeless wisdom each and every week on Thrive.
To be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God.
And this isn't just another how-to show. Pastor Brad Bigney and Thrive reveals the truth about your marriage. It's a living picture of Christ's relationship with his church. And your parenting, it's a divine calling to disciple the next generation. As Pastor Brad says, your home wasn't designed to just survive. God created it to thrive. Find Thrive with Brad Bigney right now at fortisplus.org or all major podcast platforms.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect his flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's honestly judging how we judge. Listen, if you're tired of watching your loved ones fall for every wind of doctrine that blows through TikTok, this resource could be an answered prayer. 13 powerful lectures that will revolutionize how you view biblical discernment. Plus, because we love you, there's a free study guide included. It's time to stop tiptoeing and start standing firm. Your family and friends need you anchored in God's Word now more than ever. At FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
Important dates in Christian history. 1620. Pilgrims coming to America sign the Mayflower Compact and commit themselves to seek the public good, uphold group solidarity, and forsake self-seeking. The Pilgrims' influence helped to create the religious freedoms enjoyed today in the United States. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Prepare to be yelled at. Sort of. This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps you come from a yelling family and you're used to the volume being at 11. Prepare to hear a different kind of yelling from our very own placid Dr. Greg Gifford, our Fortas Fellow, host of Transformed. His new book, Lies My Therapist Told Me. Please pre-order it. FortasInstitute.org/lies, as in Lies My Therapist Told Me. More Than a Diagnosis was the podcast episode I just listened to. Going to share as much of this as I can without interruption because it is just that good. If you don't listen to Greg Gifford's podcast, you're missing the boat.
You need to reject the secular therapeutics attempt to use medically sounding labels for arbitrarily diagnosed issues. The problem that the mental health culture is creating is it doesn't have empirical, verifiable means to say you actually have an illness. Listeners, I want you to know that the DSM-5, it's now on the TR edition, the DSM-5 TR is symptom-based diagnosing. It's you describing what the problem is, and then a psychiatrist, medical doctor, they are the ones that are going to use your words to find a category. So they find that category, and then they diagnose you, sometimes in as little as 10 minutes, but the average doctor's visit is around 17 minutes.
Woo.
So they're going to diagnose you based off the DSM-5. But notice what the DSM-5 is not doing. It's not providing lab work. There are no scans of the organ of your brain. There are no vitamin levels. There's no blood work. There's no CT, MRI, none of that. All that we're having done is you verbally describe what's happening, and then a medical doctor, and that does include psychiatrists who are medical doctors, they're going to diagnose you based off of that. This book, I've wondered if it's right next to the book, the Bible of Satan. You know, there's like a satanic Bible. I've often wondered if that's the DSM.
This is Greg Gifford being incensed, but he is. And rightly so.
You guys are like, oh, Dr. Gifford, you're losing it. No, I'm not losing it. I've lost it. Maybe I never had it, actually. That's probably the best way to say it. I wonder if it's that bad simply for the reality that it's so inaccurate. It's so inaccurate. It is not verifiable. In fact, medical doctors that are practicing empirical medicine see the DSM as highly subjective and non-verifiable. That's Dr. Thomas and Zell's words in 2013 when the DSM-5 was released. These aren't my words. Go Google Dr. Thomas and Zell, or better yet, buy the book, Lies My Therapist
Told Me.
And you'll see the direct quotation from what Dr. Enzel said.
FortasInstitute.org/lies.
Subjective, symptom-based diagnosing. Almost every other form of medicine has rejected symptom-based diagnosing because it doesn't tell you the root of the problem. Do you want to know what symptom-based diagnosing is like? It's like me having a toothache. You ready for it? You guys ever had dental work? Oh, like it just makes me cringe thinking about dental work. My middle son says he wants to be a dentist. And I just regularly say, why? Like, why would you do that to yourself? No, I don't do that. I don't want to stifle his dreams, but I'm like, what kind of sicko am I raising here? Lock my door at night. I never would want to be a dentist. It's painful to think about dentistry and the work of cleaning like a bone type structure in your mouth. Oh,
I got to tell you, I think somebody needs some biblical counseling. That seemed a little extreme, Greg.
So I have a toothache, right? And if I went to a medical doctor and said, guys, my teeth, they are killing me. Ah, we got you. No problem, Dr. Gifford. Here's a prescription. You can go to the pharmacy downstairs. We got it. And then I go downstairs and I pick up my prescription for pain relief, 800 milligram Tylenol. Is that treating the root of the cause? No, it's not. It's masking the symptoms. That is the DSM in a nutshell. It's not treating the root of the cause. It's treating the symptoms. If you take Tylenol for dental pain, you're going to create more dental pain. The pain is intended to show you that something else is going on in your body. So if you just take a painkiller when you have dental pain, you're going to really, really mess yourself up. I hope you know that by now. I had to learn that lesson the hard way. Some people gotta learn the hard way. Do you guys remember DC Talk?
Nope.
Oh, come on.
Nope.
I know you know DC Talk.
Nope.
Don't be playing. I know you know.
Nope.
I am one of those. And I had to learn the hard way via root canal that if you just mask the symptoms, they don't go away, they get worse. That's the DSM. The DSM is symptom-based diagnosing, symptom-based treatment. You're not getting at the cause of what's going on. So you have this arbitrary encyclopedia that is like a foot soldier of the secular therapeutics mission. It's non-verifiable, by the way. And then you have other foot soldiers who are psychiatrists, psychologists, and therapists. These psychiatrists, psychologists, and therapists, whether they're well-intended, and I don't believe that every psychiatrist and therapist are malicious. By the way, I think many are well-intended, naturally compassionate people. Whether they're well-intended or not, or motivated by money or a secure job, I'm not sure. But a psychiatrist is a medical doctor who has been licensed. They have passed medical school. They've been certified to actually practice medicine and licensed to practice medicine in the U.S. Like, that's no small feat, just to be clear. But right. The psychiatrist is not actually studying the organ of your brain. Just fact check me. Like, go see one. In the book, I talk about my visit to a psychiatrist. Go see one. This continues to progress. This so-called medical issue is not objective medicine, and it's now being perpetuated in subjective ways. Consider the subjective ways. There is a such thing as incentivized diagnosing.
Hold on. What was that phrase? Incentivized diagnosing? Say it isn't so, Dr. Gifford.
So now we can't prove that you have a mental illness and we can't prove you don't have it. So now that means that in order for us to have a line in the sand for how you get treatment, instead of being discerning and saying, well, I don't really think you have depression. I think that you might have like an inner person hopelessness, or I'm not sure if you have depression. I think that your focus has been on yourself too much and you're more discouraged because you're living a very myopic life. That's not depression. That's being self-focused and the results that come with that. Instead of having the wherewithal to be able to say that, we're now letting the DSM categories just inform everything. And there's incentives to get a diagnosis. That's what's tricky now. There's incentives to get a diagnosis. Did you know that practitioners, they have to do what's called medical coding, and that medical coding allows them to get paid by insurance companies? So the insurance company is going to pay the doctor, the psychiatrist, the counselor, the therapist. They're going to do so based off the DSM-5 and the categories that correspond to the DSM-5. So essentially, the therapist is saying to your insurance company, I treated your covered, the one that's covered by your insurance policy, I treated them for depression today, so pay me for that.
Mm.
It's essentially what medical coding is doing.
Mm. Now, did you notice a little tell in that diatribe on incentivized diagnosing? Greg's from the South. He has insurance. The rest of us have insurance.
So now I actually need a medical code, which corresponds to the DSM. I need that to get paid as a practitioner. Instead of saying, I don't think you have depression, instead of saying that, we're now saying, you're depressed. I'm billing your insurance as you being depressed. There's compensation through Social Security and workers' comp.
Wow.
In fact, if you are diagnosed and you can prove that the psychiatric distress, quote unquote, started at work.
Oh, yeah.
Then you can receive compensation for that.
I mean.
And if it gets bad enough where it prevents you from performing your regular or customary work, then you can now stay home and get paid to stay home based off of this psychiatric distress.
Wow.
This is picking up steam, isn't it, guys? Like, people are now equated to, this is in our schools through the Individuals with Disabilities Act, people are equated to physical or mental impairments. So if you're blind or in a wheelchair, it's being seen as the same thing as having a mental impairment. And yes, that would be a mental illness or disorder. So that means we need to make sure we have ramps at school. And we also need to have rooms that are quiet for kids to be able to go study in that have ADHD. That's the way the Individual with Disabilities Act works, that we want there to be an equal opportunity for all children to have education. And totally, I would say absolutely. That's 100% the right motivation. But downstream, you can't prove they have ADHD or they don't have ADHD. So are you saying that's the same issue as a student who has a visual impairment or a physical impairment, they can't walk? Are you saying that's the same impairment? Well, you need that diagnosis in order to unlock resources in schools.
Wow.
So what's typically the first stop? Practitioners are saying, let's get your child tested. And once they get tested, then they can get these resources. Guys, the secular therapeutic is not practicing objective medicine. And now there are incentives to find these arbitrary, seemingly medically sounding diagnoses. You need to be discerning. Be discerning. The Bible has better answers than the secular therapeutic.
And that concludes A Man Yelling. Dr. Greg Gifford's new book, Lies My Therapist Told Me, I think it's a must read. I think every pastor, every elder, and frankly, every parishioner should read this book, because there is an assault on our children, there's an assault on adults, and the Bible simply has better answers. Lies My Therapist Told Me, it can be pre-ordered at FortisInstitute.org/lies. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, production of Fortis Institutes. Well, the culture of life scored a victory in Colorado recently as the notorious late-term abortionist Warren Hearn shut his killing center after 5 decades of destroying innocent lives. The Boulder Abortion Clinic, which specialized in terminating babies up to the third trimester, announced that it has stopped scheduling clients. Meanwhile, Nevada legislators are pushing in the opposite direction with their assembly voting 2319 to advance assisted suicide legislation. The bill would allow doctors to prescribe death drugs to patients expected to live less than 6 months. The governor has promised a veto, making this deadly legislation completely unnecessary. The culture of death has always presented itself as compassionate, but it ignores better alternatives that actually respect human dignity. President Trump is taking proactive steps to address America's alarming birth rates, expressing support for a plan that would provide new mothers $5,000 for each baby. With U.S. fertility rates at historic lows, just 1.62 births per woman, the Heritage Foundation says that the situation is a civilizational crisis. And in Washington state, those consequences are tragically visible as newborns test positive for drugs at rates nearly 3.5 times the national average. The surge follows a 2023 law preventing child welfare workers from removing children from homes solely due to parental drug use, prioritizing family preservation over child safety. And in one of the cases, a 1-month-old with fentanyl in his system was found dead in bushes after being placed with a father who vanished after failing drug tests. And the state of Indiana took a stand for families last week as Governor Mike Braun signed a parental rights bill into law. The legislation prohibits government entities from substantially burdening parents' rights to direct their children's upbringing, education, and health care. It also prevents schools from hiding information about children's well-being from their parents, addressing the growing problem of schools facilitating social transitions behind the backs of their parents. Meta's oversight board is in the news, and they are fuming after Facebook ended censorship initiatives and fact-checking partnerships, changes that CEO Mark Zuckerberg acknowledged were needed because previous content moderation had resulted in too many mistakes and too much censorship. And the communist government of China is resorting to threats, vowing countermeasures against countries that make trade deals with the United States. And as the Trump administration negotiates with some 130 nations, Beijing warned appeasement cannot bring peace and compromise cannot be respected. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Names of God. Is Jesus God? One name given to God in Scripture is El Gibor, the Mighty God. One occurrence of this name stands out. In Isaiah chapter 9, El Gibor is the name given to the promised Messiah. Jesus is that promised Messiah. He is God incarnate. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The truth is one foundation is Jesus Christ, our Lord.
Church news.
She is
raise my volume.
From when he came and saw to be his holy.
Because I can't tell. Wretched Radio. Thanks to Jimmy, I have no idea how loud my volume is. I told you we needed new earbuds. And you said, no, let's just live with the ones you've got, Freeld. After all, they're $14 and we need to be good stewards here. I acquiesced. You know why? Because I'm an acquiescer. Yeah. All right, Jimmy, if you say so, I submit.
That's exactly how that conversation went.
Well, pretty much, only totally backwards. Why buy a new pair of earphones until the other ones are broken? Well, now they're actually broken and I can't hear a thing. So if I'm yelling, I'm very, very sorry. Let's get to church news, shall we? Did you hear? The Roman Catholic Pope, he is dead. He is going to have his successor announced after a whole lot of stuff goes on, and whilst these details, I have to confess to you, I don't find all that fascinating. I do believe that they are worth hearing because it is a reminder about this whole claim of apostolic succession. That it went from Peter and the baton was passed. Well, how did it get passed? What is the record of Peter saying, I dub you, the Clement or whomever they claim it was, as the new pope? And was it really the new pope if they didn't have the system, the complex system that they have today for the nomination of a new pope? Let me share with you the details, courtesy of Christian Post, which, by the way, just a shout out to our friends at the Christian Post. When you write about the pope, please don't call him Peter's successor, because he's not. And we will be revealing that, by the way. We're putting together a webinar. It's going to happen sometime this week. We want to spend some time taking a look at the claims of the papacy because I have a feeling that for the most part, evangelicals are no longer really troubled by the office of the papacy, and we should be. It is an awful institution. This is a man. Imagine somebody who came into your house and told you, mom or dad, okay, look, we'll still call you Papa or Mama, but I'm the supreme parent of this institution called your home. You'd go, hold on a second. This is my place. These are my kids. Who do you think you are, usurping my authority? Bingo, when it comes to the Pope. He is usurping the authority of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I do believe that we evangelicals, I think we need to turn up the heat on this one more. I think that so much of the politically correct society that we live in, it informs how we're supposed to talk about things. And I'm not suggesting we start talking like wild, obnoxious people. But to not be clear on the office of the papacy as being an institution that is audacious, to say the least, it's also blasphemous. And I find it quite revolting, frankly. And so we're going to be seeing the nomination of a new pope. And I think it's time that we remember that our forebearers in the Protestant Reformation stream, they weren't fans of the pope. We'll be doing that in the webinar. Tim Challies is going to be joining us. It's going to be really eye-opening. And so too are these rather dull statistics and facts about the office of the papacy election. Why am I sharing it? Because they didn't have this stuff in place. Where is this in the Bible? Where does it tell us this is how you make sure you find, how do you know you got the right pope? And tell me that the politics of this aren't just thick because you've got bishops that are going to be voting. It's the conclave. There's 135 of them that actually get to vote. And I think 108 of them were actually put in place by the former pope. So you've got a tainted body right out of the gate because can we all admit now at this point, I know the accusation of Roman Catholics toward Protestants. Hey, look at all the different denominations. There's 74,000 million denominations. It can't possibly be right. Tell me there aren't streams of Catholicism. Why are the conservatives not thrilled with the liberal Francis. Why is there vying? In fact, even the articles that talk about this, they're saying basically there are three options for a new pope. It'll be somebody who's Francis part two. It'll be somebody who is anti-Francis, or it'll be somebody who just kind of, hey, I'm just the conciliator. I'm just going to ride this wave and let's make sure that we all get along and maybe bring a little peace to the division that was caused by the liberal pope. There are indeed factions inside of Roman Catholicism. To the article, it requires a two-thirds majority of the eligible voting members of the College of Cardinals, which began when? Hundreds. Centuries later, Todd, that's the same thing. Centuries after Peter's death, the Cardinal College was constituted. Well, how did we know that the right pope was put in place before? Why did we need this? Why didn't we just use the method that the Bible talks about? Oh, yeah, because the Bible doesn't talk about it. Before the conclave itself, here's the politicking, there will be meetings. There'll be meetings called general consistories, where members of the College of Cardinals will talk about issues facing the church. And that will be really crucial in this case because there are so many cardinals from the margins of the Catholic world. So they've got all kinds of different voices vying for what kind of pope do we need? What, we've got the issue of the priest scandals. Is that the guy that we need to combat? Or is it somebody who needs to deal with global warming? Or is it somebody who needs to get back to the fundamentals of the Roman Catholic faith? You've got politicking going on. The College of Cardinals has 252 members. Only 135 of them are eligible. Check this out. The remaining 117, the ones that don't get to vote, are 80 years old or older. Where did that rule come from? You're over 80. See, I would think you should be over 80 because that's when you have wisdom. That's when you're finally getting wise. And you know some stuff. I don't know why they get relegated to the sidelines. And due to the declaration of Pope St. John Paul II in the 1996 Apostolic Constitution Universi Dominici Gregis, they're ineligible to vote in a papal conclave. So they once used to be able to vote, but now they can't. Where's that rule in the Bible? Where does that come from? It comes from the magisterium. A pope must secure the support of a two-thirds majority of the cardinals present at the conclave. Candidates receiving the least number of votes are eliminated in each round of voting until one candidate reaches the threshold. Do you see that in the Bible? Of course you don't. Why? Because this is a man-made institution. This is a man-made system. And the rules get concocted and jerry-rigged throughout the course of history. What we're witnessing in the Vatican, it's a sham. It's a total show of man-made religion, which of course means it must be a work-righteous system because it's only biblical Christianity that is grace alone, faith alone, and Christ alone. Everything else, and that includes non-Christian identifying religions, everything else is going to be a work-righteous system. So here's the question that I think is worth pondering for a bit. When we study Jesus and his interaction with the work righteous Pharisees who believed that God's favor was earned through their good deeds, ask the question, why would Jesus Christ denounce one work righteous system only to replace it with another work righteous system? That makes no sense in the world. Why? Because it's not a Bible-based religion, and Jesus wouldn't do that. He railed against works. Now, perhaps the Roman Catholic, by taking a look at Matthew chapter 25, just preparing this for next Sunday's sermon, it's been used by work-righteous people to say, see, you get judged on your works, so you got to have works. Well, there's so many reasons that's fallacious. First of all, and I think the biggie is it would contradict everything else in the Bible that isn't about works, that is about grace, including the Old Testament. And what type of works are described? What type of works are described? It is about visiting, feeding, helping, clothing. In other words, they're acts of charity. So are those the only acts that I need to do to go to heaven? Because that's what it says right there. No, Jesus was just using a category to show, hey, the genuine convert will have works. They are a necessity. They're not definitive because Unbelievers, they can do some nice things, but a true believer will do things for the Lord in response to what he has done for them. Furthermore, if that text indicates you got to work your way to heaven, well, what about faith? Where does that come in? If that's the only formula for getting to heaven is visiting people in prison and clothing people who need a scarf, well, then what happens to faith? In other words, that text does not promote a works-based salvation. But the Roman Catholic Church sure does. This is Wretched Radio.
For 25 years, we've watched Christianity's place in America change dramatically.
This is Wretched Radio.
But one thing hasn't changed: our commitment to proclaiming God's truth without compromise. A quarter century of preaching the gospel, equipping others to preach the gospel, and strengthening the local church. 25 years of equipping pastors. 25 years of helping Christians navigate an ever-changing world with biblical wisdom. From our early days to our current home at Fortis Institute, we've had one mission: equipping believers to stand firm in their faith. Today, we're creating more content than ever before. Hundreds of hours of audio and video resources, daily biblical teaching and tools to help you thrive. Thank you for standing firm with us for a quarter century. Together, we've built something extraordinary for the kingdom of God. Visit FortisInstitute.org and join us as we continue this vital work. 25 years of together faithfully serving our King. And we're just getting started.
Until tomorrow, go serve your King.
Life doesn't come with calm storms. Sooner or later, the storm hits, and the world says the answer is boundaries. Build fences, keep people out, protect yourself. But the Bible never tells you to construct walls. Instead, it teaches you to anchor yourself to truth, to wisdom, to the unshakable foundation of God's Word. That's where the Better Way with Libby Glossin comes in. Intelligent talk radio for women, like no other podcast out there. Always thoughtful and no self-help gimmicks, no fluffy cliches, just practical biblical wisdom that cuts through the noise and makes a real impact in your life. If you're tired of the feel-good messages that don't hold up when the storm comes, it's time for something different. It's time for the Better Way with Libby Glossin. Real truth, real wisdom like no other. Because in a world full of compromise, there is indeed a better way. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a dollar today doesn't go near as far as it used to. It might buy you a soft drink, but what if your dollars could multiply? For 25 years, our gospel partners have been watching their giving multiply. Every month, their faithful support transforms into college campus evangelism, biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And when you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, understand this: you're not just giving money. You're preaching the gospel to a student at Georgia Tech. You're discipling the young man struggling with pornography. And you're equipping a pastor in a small rural church. And the work, it's nowhere near finished. The fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership makes it all possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org, because when faithful people give faithfully, the gospel advances powerfully. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Attributes of God. Can God make a rock so big he cannot lift it? God is all-powerful. He created the universe and everything in it, and nothing can thwart his will. So the question of the rock is nonsensical. It does not expose a problem with God, but with the thinking of the one asking the question, and they will one day have to answer to the omnipotent God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Guess who got a new tat? This is Wretched Radio. No, not Joyce Meyer. She already got a tattoo. Instead, Max Lucado, celebrating 50 years of being saved, decided what better way to reflect on the death, burial, resurrection of Jesus Christ, who made me born again, than getting a tattoo with the Greek word tetelestai, which means it is finished. He's 70 years old. You say, Friel, is that really church news? Well, it is. Because I was just reading an article, and this actually gives me an excuse to share it, that tattoo regret is a trend. Now, my personal position on the tattoo business is The Bible does not prohibit it. I know you will immediately say, Deuteronomy, it talks about marking your body. I do believe that is in conjunction with a pagan practice. When it is being done for the sake of paganism, yeah, it's a problem. But I don't think that body art is strictly prohibited. Having said that, one must ask the question, what does it communicate? What am I telling people? And you could say, well, I'm telling them to tell us that Jesus said it is finished. True that, but it also speaks beyond what it actually says. In other words, culture reads tattoos. I remember a number of years ago, I don't know, maybe somebody out of the tens and tens of people listening would remember we did a conference and we had a speaker in from South Africa who came out and said, if you've got a tattoo, you're demon possessed. Something like that. Well, boing. And I asked, why do you say that? And he said, well, everybody knows that. Everybody where? In South Africa. Well, I understand that culturally it is understood. You mark your body and it is an indicator of being anti-biblical, anti-Christian. I get that. Now, I'll just trust that that's the case in South Africa, whether it is or not. I'm not an authority, just going on the fellow's word, that the culture reads a tattoo as somebody who's into dark stuff. Because culture does read stuff. They read tattoos. And right now in America, it's a generational sort of affair because I think most older people are kind of like, tattoos. That indicates you're a wild one. Now you think that that's crazy because you're younger. Get ready for this older person because of the younger person stating, they're nothing. They're just a way to express myself. And you can see perhaps the generational divide. Personally, I think it's okay, but you need to be mindful. What is going to be the message that I send with my testimony? In other words, the vehicle is important. How I present truth, even about the Bible, it is important. Furthermore, you've got the issue of motivation. Why are you doing it? What's the need? Why would a 70-year-old need to go to a tattoo parlor to celebrate being born again for 5 decades? Ask yourself, what is driving me to go get a tat? Because if your motive is to say, hey, I just want to let everybody know I'm cool, I think you need to re-examine that and reconsider that. If your thinking is, no, I want the world to know I'm kind of a bad boy, I'm not a stodgy Christian, I would say to you, that is a very bad motive. In fact, it might actually be symptomatic of a much deeper problem, and that is you're trying to be the one who rides the world and Christianity simultaneously. You can't. You just can't. Psalm 1, it makes it so starkly clear. You are either somebody who is committed to the word, committed to the truths of the Bible, or you're not. The former is blessed, the former prospers, the latter does not. Which are you? Ask yourself those questions before you pull a Max Lucado. So here's the statistics. In the U.S. alone, about $1.5 billion was spent on tattoos in 2024. That is, look, when I was a kid, Jimmy, probably for you too, being older than me, way back then, the tattoos, you had a tattoo and it's like, oh, were you a sailor? Did you get that in a port someplace on a naughty night? That's what tattoos automatically screamed. Hmm. Just not the case anymore. $1.5 billion. The trend on social media now is called tattoo regret. A lot of people are saying, I want this thing off of me. And that market has grown exponentially. In 2019, $478 million was spent on tattoo removal. In 2024, $1 billion was spent. So you got just about as many people want to get them off as they want to get them on. That should be instructive for you if you're thinking about getting a tattoo. There is something called regret. I really don't like that girl anymore. I haven't seen her in years. Oh, I was such a punk that time when I, oh, that's, oh, I'm just not into Harry Potter anymore. Whatever it is. A lot of people having regrets. Be mindful of that. The statistic is an estimated $3.57 billion is projected to be spent by 2032. Now, that is worth considering if you're a young person and you're thinking about getting a tat. The number of people who regret getting it done, $4 billion to get it removed. Here are the reasons: relationship changes, maturity and changed taste, starting a family, social perception, job requirements, poor artistry, fading or blurring, desire for something new or different. And of course, there's an allergic reaction or infection. According to the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, the average cost of laser removal is $700. However, could be additional fees. Facility, surgeon, anesthesia? Whoa, I hear it's a really painful procedure. I don't think that they've got this one where it's like, oh, take a pill. The one on your left tricep will go away for you. Prescriptions, many trips can be required. Healing time, you got to stay out of the sun. Never a bad idea these days. It could cut into work time, vacation time. In other words, think long and hard before you go all Max Lucado. Let's go to the UK, shall we? In the United Kingdom, headline, is there a quiet revival going on in church attendance? Maybe. And I want to be encouraged by that because I do believe there is currently a trend. People are more willing and interested in discussing Christian truth. Now, they don't necessarily believe it, but they're at least willing to hear it if that church is delivering it. 12% of adults in the United Kingdom attended church at least once a month. Now, you go, that's bad, but it's up from 8% in 2018. Okay, let's presumably take a win and trust that they're actually going to good churches. Did you see that church, by the way? This video, it was in a Methodist church, so it shouldn't shock us. There was a dude, I think he still considered himself, his pronouns were he, his, him, but he was working on his drag name. And he was talking about this from the pulpit. So please pray for me as I work on what name to choose for my drag life, whatever that's called, from a pulpit. It's profane. It's utterly profane. It's like an abomination of desolation. Seriously, you're in a Christian church with your rainbow drapery all over you, with makeup on, talking about your drag name. And I fear that the Episcopalian church ain't too far behind. Leading the charge in the uptick in church attendance in the UK, men aged 18 to 24, I am telling you, they want to talk. These kids, there's a stirring because they're realizing this ain't happening. It ain't working. I need something. They're just grasping. Go. Be the straw that they clutch because they're willing to listen to it. This fall, we are going to start doing something different on campuses. Yeah, we'll still go to a campus and do one-on-one stuff. But we want to go to campuses and do events where we invite people to come in. In fact, I can't tell you which university that we're talking about that happens to be in Oklahoma, but they would like for us to come and talk about deconstruction. Why do these kids deconstruct? More importantly, how do you reconstruct it? If you're a campus ministry and you'd like us to come at no cost, we'll come. I'll come. Greg Giffert, Brad Bigney, whomever, Andrew Walk, any of our fellows, we will come. Why? Because we want to reach the kids there. Why? Because they are wanting to know some truth and they want it to be delivered from somebody who isn't an obnoxious pistol whipper who just really taught that liberal punk what's really true about tariffs or whatever the issue is. We want to go there and love these kids because I think the tone has changed on campus. And I think the statistic verifies that. There is something going on. Here's another headline from the Christian Post. Personal commitment to Jesus soars among young adults. All right. Again, it's gone up 15 points since 2019. It's not what you want it to be, but hey, what does it at least indicate? Whether the kids are actually getting saved or not, what does it indicate? They want to talk. So if you'd like us to come and talk, please send an email to Dalton, as in Dalton, at fortisinstitute.org, and he'll get you the information. and he'll give you a menu of subjects that we can discuss that might be just right for your campus. Because if you're on a campus, you know young people are interested in Jesus. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.